Welcome back to The State of Belief. I'm Interfaith Alliance President Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch. My guest is American Library Association President Sam Helmick. You know, one of the things that we, you know, really have been trying to, and we are going to be even more, like, you know, dedicating resources and effort in is something called Faith for Libraries, that we really want to, we know that actually the majority of religious people in America by far support libraries, understand the value of libraries, recognize that, you know, stories, you know, religion is nothing without stories. Libraries are places of stories. And so this can be a collaboration. We can have real discussions about all kinds of things. Of course we can. But one of the things that I think is so important, and everyone listening to this, I am speaking directly to you. We have to show up for libraries, and we have to show up for librarians, and we have to represent and say, you know what? I appreciate, I understand that this book is not for you, but guess what? It is for me. And so can we find a way going forward where you can make sure there's stories for you and we can make sure, but without attacking, using the library as a proxy for whose stories get to win. And I think that's what's happening. You know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but I am worried that libraries are becoming a location where a certain kind of ideology is being, there's an effort to impose that and take away stories that don't adhere to an ideology. But you tell me why I'm wrong, but it does feel like when you're trying to take away Toni Morrison and when you're trying to take away stories that have LGBTQ stories or stories that feature Jews, you know, the Diary of Anne Frank, you know, it feels like there's an effort to have only some stories matter and other stories matter less.
I agree with you, and I think it kind of comes back to how I arrived to our stories are worth sharing. Learning about experiences beyond your own is so important to your development as a human being. And so whether you subscribe to the ideology that you find on every single book in an American library shelf, or you have a section that you feel more at home with, they're worth sharing. They have their space. They have their right. I think about the fact that censorship is kind of a hammer looking for a nail. And today it's some of our most marginalized communities. But you and I, as I think some, you know, in my small way, a religious scholar, could really name off a timeline of history where sacred texts were next. And so I think that there's a way to look at this where we need to have open hearts and open minds for each other and hold space for the variety of perspectives and beliefs and philosophies that the world will behold to us. But we also need to recognize that if we don't support the speech that we may not fully understand or even agree with, our speech is going to be on the line next. And so it's defending those who aren't defending others, too. It's really like a parfait of complexity.
Parfait of complexity. I love that. Did I ever tell you, this is true confession here, when I was in at the Huffington Post and for Banned Books Week or something like that, I wrote a piece intentionally provocative saying, confronting my temptation to ban books. And at the time, you know, I was like, you know, here's the thing. We all have ideas that we don't like.
Right.
You know, like, you know, and I kind of listed like, you know, you know, sexist stuff. And I had my own list of things that I would like to see get rid of, you know, and it was, you know, it was intentionally a provocative thing. But I part of the piece was actually going into, you know, talking to the American Library Association intellectual freedom director at the time. I can't remember their name, but and we had a really good conversation. And actually, they, not knowing that I had this relationship, my great grandfather was Louis Brandeis, and Brandeis was one of the people who really spoke up for freedom of expression, freedom of speech, even stuff that was not. And so they actually quoted my great grandfather at me, which I appreciated, but really talking about, like, you know, even those groups that we abhor, We have to let them. Otherwise, we've lost the principle. And I think I'm basically using that as something that, like, reinforcing what you're saying is that there are things that all of us don't like. There are stories that make us, you know, not only uncomfortable but feel worried or something like that. Appreciating that that is across the board, also recognizing freedom of speech and freedom of religion go hand in hand in this country. And you mentioned it, both First Amendment, but also, like, this is going to be a major area of our work at Interfaith Alliance, like really building new coalitions of freedom of expression and freedom of religion that recognize how those two things go together. But here's the thing, like, clearly, in this conversation, I'm realizing you're a much better person than I am. And that's fine. I can deal with it. But what drives me absolutely insane, and I have a really hard time with this, is the kind of attacks on librarians themselves. This kind of, like, you're a groomer. They say this. They toss it out. You're a groomer, which is, you know, as a gay man, is something that I'm very sensitive around. Like, you know, the idea that, you know, LGBTQ people are always grooming people, always trying to get, you know, other people to be like us, as if that was a big choice we had. But attacking librarians as groomers, it's a very dangerous thing to call someone. There's worse things, the doxing and things like that. And that drives me insane. And I think faith communities, again, and if there are any faith leaders listening to this or anybody, this is a pastoral issue as much as it is a social issue, as much as it is a democracy issue. You have librarians who are being attacked. And if you're not thinking about how you as a faith leader or faith community is caring for them, like, I want you to start, because it's really important. I've been in rooms with librarians who are breaking down crying because of their experiences of being attacked. So this is traumatic for people, and we can't say it's okay. We can't allow it.
I 100% agree with you. I can take and accept that because we are community anchor institutions, we are centers of community life, that the fracturing or the cultural or the social conversations that are going to take shape in our country right now would obviously take some shape in a library. I recognize that, but I agree with you with the attacks and the mischaracterizations and the doxing. I think we're at this, like, tipping point in our profession where, in the information age, you need thought partners and knowledge experts and folks who are going to connect you to the digital and informational world. And at the same time, when they might be more necessary than any other time in our history as a species, we're belittling them, we're denigrating them, we're mischaracterizing them, we're underfunding them. And I'm nervous about that for multiple reasons. I think in part because, to your point, it is a social and pastoral issue. To another point, they create so much community good. Nobody deserves to be treated this way. I think most faith groups would agree that some of our baseline beliefs are to think outside of self and to love others, right? And libraries are one of the places where you actually get to practice that with a shared collection and a shared group of resources. But then additionally, despite the fact that this is happening, the library workers that I cry with, like I hold hands and weep with and hug and send encouraging letters to, who send encouragement to me, they know their mission hasn't changed. And every day they're going in and they're trying to add opportunity and access and inclusion and edification to the lives of their communities. And that's hard to do so upstream, like against the current again and again and again.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That was beautifully put. So let's take this really, really seriously. And, you know, one of the things we want to do with Faith for Libraries is really look locally. I talk nationally, but this is really geared towards local. Libraries are local issues and libraries are local institutions. And so, but I do want to ask you, like, how do you explain, or how would you convey how libraries fit in this broader movement of for democracy right now? You know, I mean, like, right now, we're a lot of people talking about democracies, a lot of people worried, frankly, for our democracy. So what is the role of libraries in that broader question of, like, what's the future of democracy?
Right. So I think that when our founders created this unique form of government, you know, borrowing from here and here and taking the time to really reconcile and understanding that we were going to create a system that would obviously need to tweak and change over time, because it was meeting the moment, recognizing that history would change, the culture would change, we would continue to progress. I think they set a couple of other institutions into motion, and I think about like the press, I think about trying to build schools, and I definitely think about what our founders did to initiate public libraries. In their imperfect state, but with a good intention in mind. And so I think that that teaches me that in order for us to have an informed society, in order for the people to be able to work through community, commerce, politics, civic life, they were going to have equitable or increasingly equitable access to the array of knowledge that would be able to inform their choices. And so I think the libraries inform choices by doing a lot of things. The first is creating space where you all can talk together and learn and reconcile and debate and communicate and grow. Creating spaces where you can make change in civil rights groups, but also folks who just want to get together, order pizza and play cards, can come together and build their community in that community space. But then there has to be an array of resources, not only in the stacks, but also in learning opportunities that give us a perspective, not an endorsement of ideas, but a perspective of the voices that represent the world around us, in order for you to make your best informed choices, because the rate of legislation, the rate of civic life, the rate of social life and in community engagement, it's just so rapid that it's like a tsunami. If I can just go off on a tangent here, I think a lot of folks, when they thought of a dystopian future and recurrent in terms of information access, they think of like Orwell, and they think, oh, information will be withheld. I personally might be more of a like a Randian, where I think information will just be so prolific that we will conflate what is knowledge and what is content, and we will no longer value. And that is where libraries come in. We provide it. We push back as a professional ethic against any form to abridge or censure, but then we also sort of teach and encourage and uplift the concept that we are learning creatures, and every single day we are going to be navigating a sea of knowledge, and there are responsible, effective ways to accomplish that, and libraries help that. They're the platform by which everybody, like you said earlier, can walk in without a card and explore the world of ideas.
Isn't it incredible? I mean, it is truly amazing. What I especially love is, you know, this idea of the possibility of, you know, learning how to curate, you know, learning, like, be in conversation with someone. I mean, that's the thing, is that also, like, it's not just libraries, it's not just books, but actual people who can help you navigate that and take an interest in your own learning. I mean, it's really, they are incredible. So if Faith for Libraries was completely successful, what would you like to almost expect for congregations or faith leaders or faithful people to... What would be the ideal outcome of something like that?
I think that folks can tell that you're a person following a system of beliefs by your love. And so that's a full range. Using your libraries are the best way to advocate for them, because then you get to see for yourself what's happening between the stacks and you get to contribute to it. So robustly using your library and championing for it, I think, is one of the easiest accessible ways. Like, you know, sign up for a library card.
There we go. Back to the theme. Whatever you're doing, drop it and go get a library card right now. I want to see hundreds, thousands of library cards out there. So I do. I mean, really, because you go in and you're like, oh, okay, look around. Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, physically going to places matters. So I love that as a start.
And if you engage with us with our digital platforms, if you are near a bookmobile stop, however you engage with the library is so welcome, and it's going to be wonderful for us and for you. But then I think also just making yourself aware, if you can, of the issues. I know that there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, but because libraries are so essential to cultural and civic and community life, going to places like I Love Our Libraries, loveourlibraries.org or ALA.org to learn more about Stand Up for Libraries is a useful way to get a primer of what's occurring in terms of like pernicious legislation against library communities. I think we often frame this conversation as libraries being attacked, but as a practitioner myself that got into this because I knew that this was a life of service to my community, I'm actually seeing these as pernicious legislations against the communities I serve. And so I need the communities of my serve to understand what's happening and how that will affect their life and how we can amplify our voices and be a chorus that really sings the rights to read, the rights to learn, to write, to think, the right to pursue a library with or without a card at your leisure and freedom.
Yeah. There are boards for libraries, right? I mean, you can run for boards, right? I mean, or talk a little bit about that, because that in my 3 years, just like being around librarians, like I'm learning a lot, because it's kind of like, oh, there are boards that are that libraries have. What, talk about that, because that's another place where people could serve.
Yes. Yeah, so the governance structure of libraries is a little different depending on the library we're talking about, but all of them have the baseline of having community engagement and fingerprints in the process. So in my community, our mayor appoints members to the board that then serve as a board of trustees to support us. In other public library communities, that is an elected position, and you too can run for office. They have school boards and task forces that kind of come from those PTO assemblages that also support school districts. In fact, when I was the ILA president, I more often heard from parents and caregivers who were contributing their time, talents, and treasures to those efforts than I actually did from school librarians. And so your voice, your thoughts, your efforts in that system can only make a community library better and stronger, whether it's in a school, a college, or a public space.
We need to take another break and then a few more minutes with Sam Helmick. You're hearing The State of Belief, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance.